Welcome back to the Strong and Lean at Any Age podcast. I am Susan Niebergall, and today my favorite unicorn on the planet, Jordan Syatt, is back with me. And Jordan and I have a really interesting discussion today. We are going to be talking about disordered behaviors and relationships surrounding fitness that are not binge eating. Binge eating is kind of where we go first when we hear those terms, disordered behaviors and relationships. We're not going to talk about binge eating today. We've done a lot of content on that, and we've done podcasts about that. Today, we're going to go down some different roads, some roads that may surprise you on some other behaviors and relationships that may need your attention as well. So go grab some coffee, put up your feet, take a listen, or go put on the headphones, go out for a walk, and take a listen. I think you're really going to like this episode. Let's get to it. Hello there.
What's going on, Susan?
Pretend that we didn't talk at all for the last 20 minutes. How are you?
I'm good. I'm doing well. The ribs are sore, but everything is good otherwise.
Oh, the ribs are sore.
How's everything with you? You're good?
Yeah. It's not easy. I think that this is dragging on. This whole quarantine COVID thing is dragging on, and it's just this low level meh of everything that is just there, you know?
Oh yeah, absolutely. If you had asked me when lockdown happened, which I think that was March, right? Lockdown happened. If you had said it was going to last until now and significantly longer, I would have said you're out of your mind. I can't believe it's still going on. So, yep,
it's that low level. Yeah. Up in New York, that they're doing all these things little by little, and yet gyms are not mentioned at any point in time.
I know.
Or anything. They're going to open schools.
Oh, I heard that. Yeah, I heard that. Schools are opening, but gyms, no idea. Yeah. It's crazy. Nail salons are open. Hair places are open. Massage places are open. But gyms, which, you know, it sucks. We know so many friends and people who are literally losing their gyms and businesses. It's crazy. So, yeah, it's a mess. I did get my first ever TV that I've ever had since I lived at home in high school.
You got a TV?
I got a TV. Finally.
All right.
Finally broke down, got a TV. And
it was time.
Yeah, it was time. I've been watching Netflix and Amazon Prime on my laptop for the last few years. So it's good. It's really cool. Literally just put it up in the bedroom yesterday. So
you know, do you have a Chromecast? Because you can cast from your Netflix to the TV.
Oh, yeah. Did that. I was watching 24 on it.
Oh, yesterday. Were you? Love it.
I was watching 24 on the TV yesterday from Amazon Prime. So I have Netflix and Amazon Prime linked up to it. So yeah, super cool. It's so funny because I remember when I was a kid, we had this, the TV was like one of those big box TVs. It took up so much space. You know, I remember when flat screens first came out and it was a huge deal. It was like, oh man, this flat screen, it's like right up against the wall. And I remember the first flat screens weren't even that flat. They were still pretty, pretty thick. Mm-hmm. But we had this huge, big box TV that took up so much space.
Yeah.
And this is the first TV I've ever had since I left home from high school. And it's a flat screen TV. It's like, apparently that's like all they sell. So it's very odd to walk into the bedroom and see that there, but it's cool.
It's really cool. You know, TVs used to be like a piece of furniture.
Yeah.
There would be almost a cabinet around it, right?
That's exactly right.
Yeah. And so they've just kind of shrunk them down.
There was a cabinet around it.
Yeah.
It was like legitimately a cabinet and stuff on the side and beneath speakers. It was huge.
Yeah. The speakers were part of that.
Yeah.
I mean, it would, the technology. And then did you have the dial you had to turn?
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. And then it had the VHS component to it. And I always remember I would always get so mad if I put a VHS tape in and it wasn't rewound to the very beginning. And I'd have to sit there for 5 minutes to rewind the VHS to the very beginning of the movie again.
Yep.
So.
Well, good.
Yeah. That's we ordered a bunch of gym equipment too.
What did you order?
So we ordered, we have the dumbbells. Uh-huh. We ordered two kettlebells. We ordered a, assault bike.
Oh, okay. I have one of those, actually.
Do you at
actually,
your house?
It's not real. I mean, it's not an assault bike. No, it's an Airdyne.
Airdyne, got it. Same concept.
Yeah. Same concept. The only thing I with the Airdyne, the and this Tim laughs at me about this, but I hate just being slammed with air. That's what happens when you ride a bike. And
that's
I'm like,
exactly
do you notice how much I'm actually riding a bike? I mean, I'm not out there riding a bike either.
Yeah.
For some reason, that's different to me. Like riding a bike outside is different than sitting inside and going, and
they had I'm looking at it right now. They call it like a windbreaker. So there's an attachment that you put onto it so it doesn't hit you in the face. Apparently that's a huge concern, or a lot of people didn't like it. And I didn't know what it did, but I thought that the wind was going to go outwards and like blow papers around and all over because, you know, we have one room in the apartment. So I was like, all right, let's buy the windbreaker just in case. So we got that as well.
That's great.
Yeah. So now we'll have more equipment to do inner circle stuff until the gyms open up.
That's perfect. That's perfect. You know, one thing you and I were talking about before we hopped on was our respective books. Mm-hmm. And I have been writing, I'm in the editing process and been struggling with that a lot, just trying to fix things and do whatever. And I've been centered on these chapters right now where I am writing about things that behaviors, I guess, that I used to do all the time, never thinking that there was really anything wrong with these behaviors, like that these were kind of normal behaviors.
Yep.
And you and I do a lot of talking in the inner circle about binge eating and disordered thinking regarding food and stuff. We have video courses and things like that. And, but I wasn't a binger, but I had a lot of disordered habits. And I think it would be fun to talk about some of those. And just cause I think they're prevalent and it's not that when I hate using the word disordered, maybe that's not the best word to use. If you have a better one, maybe we can.
I think it's a very, truthful, accurate word to use. Like, I think some people, I don't know. I mean, everyone's going to be offended by something nowadays, but like, I mean, it's true. Like I think a lot of people hear disordered and they think that you're calling them disordered. It's not that they are disordered. It's that behavior or thought process is disordered. And just because it's disordered doesn't mean it's uncommon or abnormal.
Mm-hmm.
I think disorder is just the way that I view it is like it's not a healthy relationship with whatever it is you're talking about.
Yeah. And I think that's a great way to put it. It's not the person. It's the behavior.
Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that distinction is super important because I don't want anyone to think that there's something wrong with you or wrong with them. You know, it's not. It's just how we think about things. So, for instance, one thing, I was never able to really go to any restaurant that like my family wanted to pick without going into some sense of, oh my God, how am I going to make this work? Oh my God. You know, and then the whole evening would be this underlying stress of how am I screwing? I'm screwing this up. You know, I'm having this. Oh my God. And then what am I going to do after the meal to keep the damage minimal? You know, I mean, whether it's 1,000 crunches or whether I'm going to go sit on the exercise bike, you know, whatever it was, and that would have to happen pretty soon after. You know, that happened all the time to the point where my family stopped asking or my family stopped suggesting places to go. They kept asking me where we could go to eat that would have something I could eat. And I look back on that now. I'm going, oh, shit.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because usually, especially for us, and I think generally in the fitness industry, we tend to talk about like disordered relationships and specifically in regard to food and oftentimes binge eating. And it's this difficult line to read when we're talking about this, because on one hand, I think it's easy to confuse being disciplined with being disordered. Right. So if you might be super disciplined and like, I don't want to go out to eat because I want to keep my regimen, da da da, all this, all that other stuff. And then when someone says you need to relax a little bit, it's very easy to get defensive and say, you just don't understand, da, da, and like you're taking this out on me. But so it's like this is weird line, right? Between are you being regimented and disciplined, or has it crossed the line into more of a disorder, more of a of an unhealthy relationship? And I think a lot of that that can be answered by the question of, is it causing you anxiety?
Mm-hmm.
Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're regimented and you're being disciplined with something, but you have a flexible mindset, you're not going to get anxiety at the thought of going out to dinner with your family on a Friday night.
Right.
If you are regimented and disciplined and the idea of going out to eat on Friday night scares you or it angers you or it causes you to not enjoy that time out, now we're talking about a disordered, unhealthy mindset relationship with food that needs to be worked on, because you can still be disciplined and regimented without letting that happen.
Yeah. Oh, 100%. I remember being called disciplined by my colleagues at my school when they would see me constantly turn down a cupcake or turn down whatever. If we were celebrating birthdays or something, I would always be that person that turned it down, and everyone said, Susan, you're so disciplined. And, you know, it's so funny. I look back on that fueled a fire that kept fueling that boy, I must be doing something right, you know, because people were so impressed. But deep down inside, I was like, oh, wait a minute. I want to be like you, though. I want to be able to enjoy that cupcake, you know, without feeling like it's going to turn my world upside down.
Because I'm assuming for you, it wasn't a difficult thing to do to say no to the cupcake. It would have been more difficult to eat the cupcake than it would have to not. Like, not eating the cupcake was easier because there was no fear, right? When you don't eat it, it means you're doing the right thing. You're achieving your goal. Versus eating the cupcake would mean that there's fear because you're going off track. You're screwing up. You're getting fat, whatever it is.
Yeah.
It's funny because I think a lot of people look at that and they'll say, oh, wow, you're so disciplined, when they don't know that on the inside there's like a mini panic attack going on saying like, no, I'm not eating that. Like, there's no way I'm going to eat that. It's like it would be like torture to actually go in and eat that, because then, you know, on the other end of it, you're going to go on the bike, you're going to overexercise, you're going to restrict massively to try and quote unquote make up for it.
Yeah, absolutely. That and that was exactly it in my case, just not being able to enjoy things like that because of what I thought it was actually going to do. And, you know, along those same lines, not being able to take a rest day, you know, and thinking, holy shit, if I don't work out, you know, that I'm going to start losing progress, or I'm going to not make any progress anymore. And the whole irony with that is, if you look at a bigger picture with a lot of people who have the same issue, there's no progress being made. I mean, in the bigger picture, there really isn't. And it was definitely like that for me. I was afraid of losing progress I didn't have, you know? I mean, and that's where the reality gets like, you know, it's so interesting to look back on that now and how, wow, that makes zero sense, but that's what fear does.
I think what happens is, even though they're not where they want to be and haven't made nearly as much progress as they want, in their mind, they're working so hard, and they are working very hard. In their mind, they're working so hard and they're being so disciplined that they think any slip up, any deviance from the program, the protocol, whatever it is, it's immediately going to go the other way. So where they are now is their current peak. And even though it's not where they want to be, they think the slightest slip up, a missed day at the gym, the cupcake, whatever it is going to immediately pack on fat, pack on pounds, ruin all the progress that they've got so thus far. And even though it's nowhere near where they want to be, it's the fear of going any bit backwards is petrifying.
So what do you think is the best way to start directing people through this kind of thing, through the fear?
So, I mean, I think number one is having a logical conversation around it, right? Is having a discussion. And it's funny because if any of those people, if you talk to them, you could say, hey, like, do you think it's a good idea for someone to take rest days? logically, they'll absolutely rest days are really important. But then you say, well, how many rest days are you taking? And they're like, well, none. Now, automatically, they start to have this like, okay, I know what I should be doing, but I'm not doing it. And then they can start to realize they're doing it out of fear. Actually, there's another behavior that I think is very under-discussed. Someone recently DM'd me on Instagram. They were saying, hey, listen, I know you say that fat-burning pills don't work, but and I know that they don't really work, but I just can't stop taking them. And I've been taking them for years. And I see this reliance on supplements, right? Buying every supplement, spending thousands and thousands of dollars on supplements. And not that supplements are bad. I think there are a small number of supplements that actually work or are worth it for their convenience, whether it's protein powders or creatine or beta alanine, fish oil, vitamin D. These are all like great supplements and vitamins to take, but fat burning pills, or even like the products you could buy, like waist trainers, vibrating belts, all this stuff. People spend thousands upon thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars, or something like Cool Sculpting, where like, I got a lot of hate for that thing I put up on my story the other day about how Cool Sculpting, and people will spend an inordinate amount of money and go through tremendous amounts of pain in order to not focus on their training and nutrition, and instead do things like Cool Sculpting. And someone was like, well, actually, you know, Cool Sculpting does work. And I was like, what do you mean it works? Like, what does it do? Like, what exactly does it work with? And they were like, well, you know, it helps burn fat. I was like, not only is there zero research supporting that, there's research actively showing that it doesn't work. And there's research showing that it's legitimately dangerous. There's a significant amount of people who have had serious issues as a result of it. So I think, and we could talk about this like with various surgeries and all this stuff, like there's a lot of, we could call it obsessive compulsive disordered behaviors that people will do over and over and over and over again to achieve a certain look or to do what they think is going to help them finally be confident with themselves, when the reality is they logically know doing it more and more and more isn't going to work, but it's this compulsive behavior that they have a lot of trouble stopping. And I think it begins with a conversation to help them realize the logical side of it, not the emotional side.
Yeah. And that's where everyone goes wrong, is just the emotions just take over and start driving the car wherever you're going to go. You know, spending all that money on stuff and or just finding something else as the reason why it's not working, instead of looking inside yourself and what you've actually been doing consistently over periods of time, is what's not happening, what needs to happen. And what's interesting is, you know, you and I talk to people all the time who swear that they're eating however many calories a day and they're not losing weight. I was on the phone just the other day with this woman, and we went through this, the same old thing. I'm only eating 1200 or however many it was, some outrageously low number for her. And she wasn't being successful. If you were to listen to her at first, you would think, wow, she's doing everything, until you listen really carefully and things start to fall apart a little bit. We start to find out, well, the weekends are not quite as pulled in as what we thought. We're eating out 4 times a week. Okay, there's that. I mean, there's a lot of things that after she started thinking about it, yeah, you know, I'm probably overall not eating that much. And that's what has to happen, is you have to find those loopholes. I call them weight loss loopholes. All these little places, you know, pits that you might be falling into, instead of, oh, I'll pay $9,000 for this, you know, thing that's going to fix it all or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I think this is the crux of the issue, isn't it? Where it's like, once you logically know that it's not going to help, or it's not the right or the best thing to do, the hardest part of it is actually overcoming that very strong emotional desire, compulsive response to do it. And this holds true in literally like every aspect of life, not just in fitness. Like this is in all in many, many obsessive compulsive behaviors and disordered behaviors. I think the most empowering thing and the one of the reasons that you and I talk about something as simple as walking so much is because usually when you want to change that behavior, we look at the overarching behavior and the numerous times, the weeks, the months, the years they've spent doing that behavior, and they think of it, well, I just have to stop now, and that can be beyond overwhelming for some people. Mm-hmm. Sort of like, so if we're looking at stopping binge eating, right? People, someone who binge eats four times a week, it's like the idea of stopping cold turkey and never binging again can seem more or less impossible, right? So now we get into the self-efficacy discussion. Like, I just don't think that I'm going to be able to do that. So if instead of saying, hey, I'm going to stop altogether, you just try and reduce the frequency with which you do it, all of a sudden it becomes much more possible. Yeah. Right. So if someone's binging four times a week and you say, hey, what if we cut that down to three times a week? Right. So instead of doing it 16 times in the month, let's go for 12 a month. Now, all of a sudden, number one, it's not bad. It's not off limits. They can still do it if they want. And number two is it's just a small progressive step towards making that change. So if we take this over to taking a rest day in the gym, if you know that you need to be okay with taking rest days, but it's very difficult for you and you're working out 7 days a week, then instead of trying to go down to four, simply try and take four total rest days over the course of a month. Right. So yeah. One time a week is, mm-hmm. I think these small progressive steps can make seriously help make that change more permanent and more realistic.
Yeah. Oh gosh. Yeah. And I think regarding the gym part, I've had people that would be working out 6 to 7 days a week, twice a day, whatever it is. And putting in a rest day, but letting them be active on that rest day. I mean, mm-hmm. which doesn't mean another HIIT workout. You know, it might mean, okay, just go walk. Just go out and walk for a little bit, loosen up or whatever, something. But yeah, smaller steps, not cold turkey.
Yeah. I think the issue I see with rest days and specifically not taking rest days is the impact that it has on them and their family and their, not even necessarily their social life. Like, I'm not even as concerned about their social life. I guess mainly it's because I, you know, we tend to work with mothers and fathers, right? And like mm-hmm. people mm-hmm. that work in a family. Mm-hmm. And if you see a mother or father who works out seven times a week and can't take one day off and without getting really upset at their kids, or like if they have to miss a workout and like they resent their family for it, for whatever it is, or they're on vacation, they can't get the workout in, and it's just like the entire vacation is ruined. Yeah. That's my like I'm not as concerned about, okay, well, you can't go out and drink on Friday night. Like, yeah, that's a concern, but I'm much more focused on how is this affecting your family life? In which case, if you can't not work out without it affecting your family life or how you think about your family or how you interact with your family, that's when you really have to take a step back and saying, are you using fitness to improve your life, or is fitness actually detracting from your life?
Oh, yeah. I think that's a great point, because I think the line's been crossed at that point. Mm. You know, it's no longer improving your life. It becomes a stressor because how, especially if you go on vacation and you're going to spend however many hours, an hour or two a day on your vacation because you feel like you have to work out, mm-hmm. Or because you're afraid that you're going to lose your progress or you're going to get fat because you're on vacation or what, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, it's significant. And I can remember my toe was in that territory.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it was in that territory. And when I first started working with you, that was one of the hardest things for me.
Yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
What was that, 5 years ago now?
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That's insane.
That's crazy.
But what's interesting, though, is the complete change with how that is now, you know, and it's not something that will change overnight, which I think people just want to walk in the room, turn on the switch, and it's done. But there was some, you know, I mean, times where you don't feel comfortable with it, but over time you chip away at something like this.
Yeah.
And then you become comfortable with not working out, you know, taking an entire week off because your body just needs a break, or you're going away, or, you know, whatever, not worrying about okay, it's Wednesday. I need to work out. It's Wednesday, you know, and I can't get to the gym today. What am I going to do?
Yeah. Yeah. I see a lot of the people who struggle with this. They'll say things like, well, I want to be fit so I can, you know, be fit and be with my kids when they're older and, you know, walk my daughter down the aisle, be at their wedding, see my grandkids, all that stuff. And I think that's a great goal. The issue is you're not able to be with them now.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you can't be on vacation with them right now and be in a good mood because you are upset about not being able to get your workout in. When reality is like, that's not because you want to be around for the grandkids. That's because you're concerned about losing progress now.
Right.
And your concern about losing progress now is preventing and inhibiting you from being able to enjoy the present moment with your kids and your family right now. And it's like, I think it's an easy fallback for people to disregard the issue at hand to say, well, I want to be fit to be around when I have grandkids or to be when my kids are older. It's like, I think it's a wonderful goal and I support that fully. But is that really your goal? Or are you more scared of the possibility of gaining a couple pounds of fat over this vacation? So then it completely destroys your ability to enjoy it.
I was just going to say, I think it's, for the people that say, well, I love to work out, you know?
Yep.
And I think there's a, you know, for me, there were shreds of truth in that because I do, I mean, and I have, but those shreds of truth were hiding the real issue, you know,
yep.
The being afraid to let go and not do something.
You know, it's interesting. If you look at the research around motivation and habits, oftentimes, and by often I mean like significantly more often, people are motivated by the fear of a negative outcome rather than the benefits of a positive outcome.
Mm-hmm.
So for example, I mean, generally people will be more motivated to not be homeless than they will be to make an extra several thousand dollars a year,
mm-hmm.
right? People will be more motivated to not have cancer than they will be to just generally improve their health, right? So the fear of a negative outcome is significantly more motivating to people than the possibility of a benefit from a positive outcome. And this is, I think, very prevalent in that behavior that we see, right? So it's like the fear of getting fat or the fear of losing your progress will motivate you to work out. And then when you work out 7 days a week, the natural thing to say is like, well, I just love working out. It's not that you just love working out. It's that you have to really examine your behavior and say, are you doing this because you legitimately love it? Or what if you took one day off? Would that cause fear? Would that cause anxiety? Would that cause anger? If that's the case, you're not doing it because you love it. You're doing it because you're scared.
And I think that that's such a great question to ask people. I like to ask people that all the time because I get pushback at the beginning a little bit. Oh, no, man, I just love it. It's part of what I do, you know, blah, 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 all that stuff. Got it. Okay, then ask yourself that question. And there's kind of a pause. And almost every single time somebody will come back and say, you know, you're right. That's mm-hmm. exactly what's going on here. It's a bit of a self-reflection. And it's really telling. And the irony here is this, you know, that at least for me, I wasn't making any progress, really. I was just kind of spinning my wheels or whatever. And once I took some rest days and actually let my body just kind of chill, then not only was the next workout that much better, but I was excited to go. You know, I felt like refreshed or whatever. It was like, it's workout day. I get to go, you know? It just changed everything. And the amount of progress, and you know this, the amount of progress I made once I started doing that was crazy.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, so it's an interesting phenomenon. I think it's super, super prevalent, actually.
Very. You know, I was thinking the example that you use for fat loss is the car example, and mm-hmm. nutrition is the driver, and mm-hmm. training is the passenger. And it's funny, I was thinking as you were talking, I was like, oh, it's so funny. A lot of people, they think that they're using training as the driver,
mm-hmm.
but I think what's going on is their emotions are the driver.
Yeah.
Right? It's like their emotions
are
driving the car.
Yeah.
Exactly. Their emotions are the driver. And then because their emotions are driving the car, then they fall to the one that they actually shouldn't be focusing on, right? So if their emotions are driving the car, they're going to try and use exercise to be the driver of fat loss, when in reality,
yeah, and
we know it's nutrition.
Yeah, and it's a whole lot easier to have that than it could be 100%. to have the other one, right? You know, I mean, it's and easy it really, to add another three classes or another whatever.
Oh, yeah. I've always said I would way rather work out hard for an hour, hour and a half every day, and then be able to eat whatever I wanted.
Yeah.
And have as low, like have a 6% body fat, whatever. I would way rather that than have to focus on my nutrition so intently. Like, I very firmly believe if working out super hard for an hour, hour and a half every day was the key to it, significantly more people would be shredded and have a super low body fat. But it's not the case. Significantly more people, I have zero research to back this, but I would imagine significantly more people work out very, very, very hard compared to the number of people who really meticulously track their nutrition.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, when we talk about people that meticulously track their nutrition, this is kind of another disordered behavior, is those that can't not track their,
yep.
You know, I mean, that have gone now from over here to way over here, they have to track. And the thought of not tracking or not weighing themselves or tracking somehow sends anxiety and fear through the roof.
Yeah. It's, I mean, we could talk about orthorexia. We could talk about like people who, the idea of not having a quote unquote healthy food, right? That's this idea of you can only eat quote unquote clean foods or else you're ruining progress, or you can't eat anything unless it's weighed and measured meticulously. I remember, I forget, might've been a nutrition course in college. I completely forgot where I saw this. Might have been a nutrition course in college. I'm basically talking about this type of disordered behavior. And I remember there was a whole documentary made about this couple who literally weighed every single thing they ate, including individual leaves of spinach and like individual, like the stalks of asparagus or whatever it is. It's like every single thing they ate was weighed and measured. And it was so interesting to me to watch, and like most people are not like that, right? But there are people who are so meticulous and obsessive compulsive about it that it's very interesting to me how people can normalize their disordered behaviors, how they can justify it, and how they can adapt to living with it, right? And how what's interesting to me is that you never know just by looking at someone what they're going through, right? It's like if you saw any of these people on the street, you could look at them and say like, wow, like that's a fit person. I want to look like them. Like,
they've got their shit together.
They've got their stuff. Exactly.
Yeah.
It's so interesting to me how, I mean, we are so adaptable and we're so good at putting on the face that we want people to see that I think it's so social media really exacerbates this, but I also just think it's part of the human condition where you look at other people and you perceive them in the way that basically, I think you often perceive people based on your own insecurities, right? So whatever you're insecure about, you look at other people and just assume they've got that part together. They've got that figured out. So maybe you have more body fat than you'd like, and you look at someone with lower body fat and like, they've got it together, but you have no idea what's going on with them. You have no idea, like you have no idea like when the last time they ate was. Like maybe like they've been a 48-hour fast.
Yeah.
Like, because they went on vacation and they like feel like they screwed up, so they haven't eaten for 2 days, whatever it is, right? Or like maybe they woke up at 4 a.m. so they could do a 2-hour workout, and like they do that every single day. And if they don't do that, then they're pissed the entire day. It's like it's a cliche saying, but everyone's fighting their own battle that you know nothing about. And I think this is why it's so important to be so objective and honest with your own behavior, and have that conversation. How would you recommend a friend act? What would you recommend a friend do? Because without that type of logical, objective intervention on yourself, you'll just allow that behavior to perpetuate over and over and over again.
And how exhausting is that? I mean, it is, yeah. I mean, trying to keep up an appearance or a front that is not you. I dealt with this all the time when I was a counselor at the school. I would see kids put on this facade at school and they go home and they melt down because they're emotionally, they can't hold it up all day long. They get home, close the door, and and it's the same thing when you don't know what that person has to do to keep up how they look or correct. Whatever. There's so much more to everyone's story. That person could be exhausted trying to be that this way. They could be miserable. I mean, they might be happy. I don't know. The point is you don't know. And you don't want to assume that it's super easy for them. I mean, I get this all the time. People tell me I must have good genetics. The whole supplement thing. And it's like, yeah, let's not discount how hard I work either. You know, correct. There's kind of that part too.
Yep.
People just assume that. And it's a reflection kind of where they're coming from.
It works in the opposite way too. It works in the opposite way in terms of someone looks at someone with a higher body fat percentage and says, oh, well, they're lazy. It's like,
yes,
that's not the case. Like, you can't just look at someone and know that, oh, they've got it all figured out or they're lazy.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of it is predicated on your own individual insecurities. Oftentimes the way you perceive or judge other people is largely based on the stuff that you're struggling with yourself.
100% it does. Absolutely it does. It paints the picture over everybody.
Yeah.
And if you're not aware of that, then that's going to lead you down some not so healthy paths because it's not, nothing's accurate, you know, correct. With that kind of filter on it.
And with that understanding, I think it's also an important discussion to have around when you really think about it, every single person is walking around in a different reality.
Yeah.
We're all walking around and we're all like, our eyes are looking at a different movie. Every single person is walking around seeing something different. And what they're seeing is based on literally everything that they've been through in their life and family, friends, social, societal, whatever, all that stuff. But then their own insecurities, their own things that happened to them when they were 6 years old that maybe they don't even remember anymore, but it impacted them greatly. And it impacts the way you view the world, the way you view people, the way you judge people, the way you interact with people. And I think one of the reasons that's so important to remember is because when you understand that people, that everyone is seeing the world in a different way, that maybe someone might judge you or say something about you, you can start to hopefully get to a point where it doesn't bother you as much because they know nothing about you. And it's from their perspective, which could be completely and utterly skewed related to your perspective.
You know, one thing I used to think about doing, and I never did, but I would see other people do, and that is take their own food with them to even a restaurant, for heaven's sakes, or whatever. And I remember thinking, I remember going to actually a fitness conference in Kansas City. You know which one I'm talking about. And seeing the amount of people there that did that, you know, all the time. And I used to think, oh, that's what you're supposed to do, right? You know, I mean, you talk about disordered thinking. I mean, that's the last thing I want to do now is take my little Tupperware full of chicken and broccoli to someplace.
Travel across the country with it.
You
prepare your meals for like 4 days, travel across, bring it on an airplane. Yeah.
And a little cooler. No, you know, I mean, but that's what people do because they think that if they don't do that, that they're going to gain fat. They're not going to make progress. I mean, it's the same thing. It's just interesting behaviors that we see a lot that aren't maybe as associated. I mean, you always think about binging as the big issue, and it's prevalent. I mean, I never realized how prevalent it was until maybe the last 5 years or so. It is prevalent, but there's also a lot of other things like that. I mean, there are a lot of people that take their food everywhere.
Yeah. 100%. And people over-exercising, people spending an outrageous amount of money on supplements out of a fear, right? Because, well, if I've been taking fat-burning pills for this long and I've only lost this amount of fat, well, what happens if I stop taking them, right? It's like, well, if I stop taking them, then I'm definitely going to gain a lot of fat. It's like a lot of these unhealthy behaviors that really the first step to overcoming them, which is the really quite, well, how do you overcome it, is not to try and, you know, this is actually a separate discussion, and I think it's an important one. For some people, stopping cold turkey is the answer.
Yeah.
For some people, it's like they're just like, that was like me with binging, right? Where it's like I just decided one day I was done. After doing it for the better part of like 8 years, I was like, I can't do this anymore. And I stopped. And that was it.
And that was me with my first program from you.
It was.
That was cold turkey for me.
It's so interesting. For some people, cold turkey is that's what works. And for other people, a slower, more progressive, like, okay, maybe just reducing it one day at a time, reducing like on a monthly basis, a little bit less until all of a sudden it's minimal if there at all. But I think the initial starting point has to come from making the decision to make the change, right? And that can only come from logical, objective awareness, which I think if it's so easy to avoid that type of conversation with yourself, it's so easy to say, well, they just don't get it. They're just not disciplined. They don't understand, blah, blah, blah. It's so easy to put it on other people rather than to look at yourself. Mm-hmm. Right? Everyone wants to be a victim. Everyone wants to play the victim card, right? So it's like,
I mean, it's easy. Those excuses become the justifications, right?
Correct.
You know, like, I'm not good at that. It never works for me. I've tried everything, you know, all those that we keep telling ourselves over and over and over, we start to believe. And then, you know, then you got to get out of that. It makes it really, it's tough, but I mean, you have to have that honest conversation with yourself at some point, because none of that's true. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are a lot of things I'm not good at. There's a lot, but that doesn't mean I'm not going to try anymore, you know, just because
100%.
I'm not good at it.
Yeah.
I mean, all those, I see that a lot. The whole, and the one I used a lot was, you know, tracking food. Oh my God, that's going to be obsessive. It's going to take the fun out of everything. That's why I didn't do it for years. Cause I legitimately thought, with no reason to think this, by the way, cause it's not like I'd ever done it, but I just assumed that it was going to take the fun out of living and the fun out of eating.
Yeah. And I don't even know if Instagram was around. Was Instagram around when you first started tracking?
No.
So, I mean, I know now.
I mean, it might have been, but not to me anyway.
Yeah, got it. I mean, now you can always find someone with a different opinion, with an opposing opinion, right? So now I see everyone, like there are some people who say calorie counting is everything, and there are other people who say calorie counting is a complete and utter waste of time. So there's always someone, and there's always going to be a study that supports whatever you want, right? Always. But I think what you said is that's really important for people to understand is if you've never personally tried it, then you don't have a complete opinion. And I phrase that very deliberately, because you can have an opinion on literally anything you want. Mm-hmm. You don't have to have done it. You don't have to have gone through it. You don't even have to understand it. But your opinion is not complete unless you've personally tried it. And your opinion will be more valid and more aware if you've at least given it a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I think that's really valid too. And I fell into that trap. And I think you really have to give something a fair shot and give it a try, because as I found out, it was nothing like what I thought. And, you know, I was intimidated to use an app. So guess what? I didn't use an app. I don't have to use an app. You know, you find what works for you. And I have found what works for me. So, you know, this old dog here can learn all kinds of new tricks, and then you find what kind of settles in and it works. But it's just interesting how we allow those excuses that we tell ourselves all the time. It sets us up for not being successful, right? I mean, it's like the cushion, you know, in case it doesn't work, this is why. So I can come back and say, see, I told you, you know, it's that kind of thing. We're protecting ourselves in some weird way.
Yeah. It's why I tried the carnivore diet. It was like, I had a very strong idea of what was going to happen. And I had a very, I thought that I knew I would not only want to eat meat and eggs and fish for the rest of my life, but I knew that I would be able to have a significantly better, more whole, complete opinion on that way of eating if I actually tried it. And I will say, I even said it in the video I made about it, I was shocked at how much better my concentration was.
Oh, wow. Right?
Despite the satanic diarrhea that I had, and despite like the overwhelming discomfort that I was in throughout that entire process, the one thing that I was surprised about was, like, you know, the mental clarity that came with a reduced carbohydrate diet was very real. And like, I've read about it before, and I've, you know, it's pretty clear in the literature that something like that does exist. For me, I'm glad that I tried it, because now I know. This is really what it boils down to, right? Is even though there was more mental clarity and more focus, it came down to sort of weighing and measuring, is that worth it for me, right? And the complete and utter discomfort and pain and what I would have to give up, the carbs, the social situations, all that stuff, was not worth that one benefit. And I think that's one of the major benefits to actually trying something yourself, is you don't know unless you try. Yeah. It's like, if you struggle with taking rest days and you just think, well, I'm going to gain fat if I take 2 rest days a week, it's like, you don't know unless you give it a shot. So give it a shot for a month, take 2 rest days a week, see how you feel. You might find out that your workouts that you actually do are significantly better because of those rest days. And you also might find out that you spend more time with your family, your kids, your spouse when you take those rest days. And so then you start enjoying life more. And then you can start using fitness to enjoy your life rather than allowing fitness to run your life. It's like, you don't know unless you give it a shot. So at the very least, give it a shot before you write it off.
100%. I think that's so, so, so important. That's a good place to kind of put a period, right? I mean, that's
period, kid.
That's it. That's it. I mean, you got to take something for a test drive and not worry about what if it doesn't work out, or what, it's not a waste of time. You actually learned quite a bit, you know, for whatever it is, whatever you try. And I think that's a prevalent feeling too, that people think it's a waste of time. It's not a waste of time. It's actually a really good use of time. To take time to try something, because God knows, what if you like it and what if it really works for you, you know, then you're well on your way.
And one of the best lessons I've learned throughout my life is not just learning what you do like and what works, but also learning what doesn't work.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, I'll never forget when I was a sophomore in high school going into junior, I got a job as a janitor over the summer. And I worked literally at my school system, my public school system hired kids to help like the main janitors out. And so I was like a student janitor. And over the summer, like, I cleaned out all the classes and got all the desks out and did all the cleaning and all the stuff. And I remember telling my mom, I was like, I really don't want to be a janitor. She was like, what a wonderful experience for you to actually like go through what they do on a daily basis, so that now you know that is definitely not a job that you want. Yeah. It's like things that you wouldn't even think about in your wildest dreams. It's doing something is always better than not doing. Yep. Trying is always better than not trying. So at the very least, you have a more complete opinion. And even if the only thing you get out of it is knowing that you don't want to do it anymore, that's a win.
That's a huge win. Yeah. Great way to end it. Great way to end it. So tell everybody, if they're under a rock, where can they find you? I know that they can find you everywhere.
Yeah. If you Google my name, Jordan Syatt, S-Y-A-T-T, you'll be able to find me, Instagram, podcast, all that stuff.
Everywhere. Well, this was fun.
This was
fun.
Great.
Yeah.
Thank you. This was a good discussion. I hope it was helpful.
Yeah, me too. I think it will help a lot of people. Amazing. So thank you. Love you.
I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. See ya.